Howdy, howdy!
Why, hello and good day to all.
And welcome to But It Was Aliens.
Was Aliens, the extraterrestrial comedy podcast brought to you by...
By...
Two former MIBs.
Who asked too many questions. We probe paranormal events to determine for the questionable benefit of humanity as to whether those events really were paranormal. We take it in turns to host, and the co-host has no idea what is coming up each week. Hosting today, as the astute of you will have been able to guess, is me, Kev, which means that in the co-host seat this week is Mr. Granville Moonwalker. Today we are heading to, well, strap in, son, because we are heading freaking all over the show.
We're going everywhere.
Absolutely.
Are we going all over the world, universe, Milky Way? Galaxy.
Truthfully,
time.
All of those. I'd argue we go over time every week.
Pedantic prick.
We begin today's episode.
Time and space.
In time and space. About 2 minutes ago. Well, about 1 minute ago, actually. But we begin today's case in 1947. Or do I mean on the 31st of May, 1987? Or do I in fact mean the end of 1984? Let's start with that one. On December the 11th, 1984, California-based extraterrestrial researcher James Shandera, who had been working on a canned alien documentary, received an envelope. Inside this envelope was a smaller envelope, but inside that envelope was another envelope. Can you guess what was inside that envelope? It was a 35mm film, which, when developed, appeared to show images of 8 pages of classified documents from November the 18th, 1952, describing Operation Majestic 12. The documents stated, top secret, magic eyes only. That's magic spelt M-A-J-I-C.
On the spelling of magic,
yes.
M-A-J-I-C,
mm-hmm.
Jamie is also spelt
Jane.
J-A-I-M-E.
Yeah, like shame.
Jamie.
But is it?
Yes. You threw me off and it bugged me that whole fucking time.
These documents, let's call it a briefing, detailed...
Briefing.
...that what went down at Roswell...
Darren.
...at Roswell in 1947 had been concealed. I mean, no shit, right? But the layers of concealment went deeper than many realised.
Ooh, is it like a Russian stacking doll? Where you think mm-hmm. you're done, but then you just
keep... For even those aware of the concealment were not aware of the concealment. Deep.
The concealing.
Deep. The document also detailed a second extraterrestrial craft recovery, not just Roswell. This document had been written by Roscoe Hillenkoetter, an important Central Intelligence head for President-elect Dwight Eisenhower. According to this document, prior President Harry Truman had authorized the creation of a group. A supergroup, if you will, a group of the most important and influential figures within the intelligence and scientific communities to study those extraterrestrial remains. This group was called the Majestic 12.
Ba-da-dum. These 12, how great was their majesty?
Oh, they were the most majestic.
Were they named the Majestic 12 because of what they were going to do? Or were they majestic figures picked and there was 12 of them, so they are the Majestic 12? Like, does one of them come down and is dressed in the most majestic suit ever.
So I'd argue a little bit of both. These, and I will cover who these folks were later on, these folks were sort of central leaders of their fields, very important folk who were being tasked with the most important of duties.
So that's where they got their magistry from, not what they kind of looked like or how they betrayed themselves.
Well, they may have looked majestic to go with it.
They didn't, They didn't get it because one of them had a majestic earring or crown.
They all wore robes.
A crown.
I don't think...
Well, that's how you get into Majestic 12.
You have to just wear a crown.
Just wear a crown. I mean, who... Imagine just going to an interview and just rocking up with a crown.
Job's yours.
Yeah.
So tell us about yourself. You just whip out a crown from your bag and slap it on your head.
Do you know what?
What?
I really want to apply for a job now. I have no intentions of taking the
said job. Just so you
just
can wear...
turning up with a crown.
So start a new trend, applying for jobs for a giggle just so you can turn up at an interview and do crazy shit.
Crown and a cape.
So tell us why you're the ideal candidate. Bitch, look at me! I'm in a crown!
Like, tell me why you shouldn't hire me.
Well, we're the ones interviewing here. This is about you joining our company. Perhaps you'd like to answer this again.
This is about your company being good enough for me to come and work for you. So how about you sell me on that?
So do you have any skills that make you... Do you have any skills that make you suitable for the role? Just silence.
Just sit and stare at them.
See how long it takes them to say something else.
You blinked first, bitch. I win.
That's not really an answer. Tell us why you've applied for this job. I've got a crown.
I'll just be out of answers. This will be fucked. Why not? I want the money.
We feel like
you seen this crown?
We feel like you're wasting our time, sir.
I feel like you're wasting mine. Glass on.
Get out of my office.
So I don't know if it works like this anymore, but when the secretary or whoever it is takes you in to the office to have your interview.
Yep.
Literally just go, garçon, drink. No matter who they are, just call them garçon.
And oi. Oi, garçon.
Drink. We don't talk to our employees like this. No, you don't talk to your employees like this.
Interviews today tend to be a mixture of... face-to-face and via Teams, but even if it's via virtual means.
Turn up with a crown.
Crown. And then still click your fingers. Oi, garçon. Who are you talking to? Your receptionist.
But when the interview starts, just go, hold on. Am I the only one who hasn't had their parcel arrive? No, what are you talking about? Well, your secretary is meant to bring me food and wine. I haven't had it arrive. Why are we starting this interview?
I'm basically here for the food. There was no food in the advert, sir.
The only problem with Teams is they can mute you.
Yeah, but you can also mute them. When I'm in meetings, I constantly hover over that mute button for other people, thinking, if you annoy me... UFO researcher James and colleague William Bill Willie Moore went on the hunt for further evidence. There was the odd reference to MJ here or there in articles.
Majestic 12 or
no,
Michael
Jackson? No, Majestic 12. But the trail went cold.
Hey, Tito.
During 1985, Willie Moore received another envelope. This envelope contained a letter encouraging the researchers not to give up, reading, "When doors don't open, turn to windows." The researchers knew that they couldn't give up.
They were basically being told to break in.
Basically, someone is watching them trying to watch. Willie Moore, flew to Washington, D.C., for they knew that they had to search the National Archives for references in official documents to this supergroup. Shockingly, the ufologists found a July 1954 memo from General Robert Cutler, an assistant to Eisenhower, referring to an MJ-12 Special Studies Group, which was to be held at the White House on the 16th of July, 1954. Holy shit! They found evidence! MJ-12 does exist! When this document was released on the 29th of May, 1987, the extraterrestrial spacecraft intelligence community at large went wild. Looking into this document, it was confirmed that President-elect Eisenhower was indeed in Washington for briefings on the 16th of July, 1954. Evidence! Around this time, an anonymous intelligence official gave Britain's leading ufologist of the time, Timothy Good, a copy of that Majestic 12 1952 briefing. Knowledge that Timmy was going to go public led Jamie Jame and Willie to release their information first on May the 29th alongside that Cutler document in May 1987. This got everyone's attention, ranging from the New York Times to the FBI.
Damn, son.
All of this links back to a little place called Roswell in the year 1947. It's nearly time to unlearn everything that you thought you knew, because we told you about it back in episode 58. Don't listen to us.
How did they find... I suppose they didn't know when the old Timmy was going to drop. They just knew that
he was preparing.
Yeah, so they were just like, fuck it, let's
gotta
just get ahead
there
of
first.
It.
Got to
get
there first. Yep. Yeah. You can kind of see the sense in it.
Absolutely. Something that big back then, you want to be the first ones to drop knowledge of it.
Mm-hmm.
Make some dollar bills, y'all.
Yeah, I mean, even on this show, I'll often learn of a case, and if it's one I've never heard of and I can't see that anyone else has covered it, that'll make me all the more keen to cover it first. It's ours!
Get it out there. I think we were pretty on the fence with Roswell, weren't we?
Like, you I think weren't. It was... You were well in. I was on the fence. I was like 51, 49.
Have you listened back to see if I was well in?
Yes.
Can you prove that I wasn't being mind-controlled at the time?
No.
Okay, I was on the fence back then.
You were angry at me being closer to on the fence.
I've got the crown on now, so...
This is my episode,
I was on the
bitch.
Fence. We were on the fence back then. Nah, that's cool. So we're about to find out what really... went down.
Is we're going to find saying? Out about the truth beneath the truth beneath the truth. So the cover-up of the cover-up.
The revealing, you would say.
You could say that we're about to go to deep.
The deepening.
Deep. Well, we won't go too deep into Roswell because we have probed it in depth, but here are the basics. The story goes that W.W. Mac Brazel found some debris in a field in June 1947 and swept it aside. On July the 5th, 1947, Mac heard about flying saucers in the pub, and so Mac took some of that debris to the sheriff's office at Roswell. Sheriff George Wilcox called in the army, and Major Jesse Marcel and Captain Sheridan Cavitt went to investigate. On July the 8th, Marcel took the debris to Colonel William Blanchard, and Blanchard called it in, being ordered to transfer the material to Fort Worth Base. RAAF Information Officer Walter Hort then issued a press release confirming the military had recovered a flying disc. On July the 9th, the Army announced the debris was in fact a weather balloon. Officially, a bunch of atomic test-detecting balloons had been released from nearby Alamogordo Army Airfield in June and had been lost near Max Field. Unofficially, this was an alien craft recovery. Not just that, but an alien autopsy. Major Marcel, in 1978, came out to confirm that the balloon story was a cover-up, though Marcel did deny that any alien bodies were recovered, but that too may have been a cover-up. That's the legend, but what actually went down at Roswell, according to the Majestic 12 official documents, is that aliens ejected from a craft over Roswell. The craft exploded and was basically destroyed, but bodies were recovered a week later.
Why a week later? Did they...
It was quite a big area.
Yeah, that's a good point. I suppose...
And this was 47.
They didn't just...
Back in 47?
Eject and die instantly, did they? They might survive for a couple of days.
Ran around.
Tried to find...
What the hell is this place?
And then were found all injured and dead.
Help us. In addition to Roswell, there was another. February the 13th, 1948, Aztec, New Mexico. There was another still on March the 25th, 1948, again near Aztec, New Mexico. 17 alien bodies were recovered from those two crash sites alone. Human body parts were stored in both crafts.
Ooh, collectors.
Dirty little bastards. Between January 1947 and December 1952, there were at least 16 downed non-human craft. 13 of those were in America, and 11 of those 13 were in New Mexico. One was in Norway, and one was in Old Mexico. 65 alien bodies were recovered. One of those bodies was still alive. We've now hit above top secret levels. We are talking more top secret than the Manhattan Project. We are talking pinky swears. You don't get more serious than this.
Get bigger than a pinky swear. And my left hand can't really pinky swear.
We should probably confirm that by listening to the rest of this episode, you may be placing your life at risk.
They turn up at your door. You know nothing.
You never heard this podcast. Don't tell anyone, but also tell all your friends so that they listen.
You called them sneaky little bastards.
For having body parts, yeah.
Yeah. Now, I can totally see that being something that we would do. Not us personally. But if we had the capability to go to other planets and we went to another planet and we saw a creature there that we didn't know or understand, I could see us trying to capture that, to study it.
See, now, I agree to an extent, but I don't think we'd try to capture its arm or its leg. I think we'd try and capture and store the whole thing rather than individual parts.
Oh.
Yeah. Body parts.
But.
Wow.
Whoa. Are the body parts there because of a crash, or are the body parts stored individually in cases?
So it's not clearly clarified.
Also,
the way it's written suggests that they were storing parts, but like I say, that's not definitive.
Also, I believe we would store parts.
I believe we are sick bastards.
Yes, we would dissect whatever it is to its core. to figure it out.
But then wouldn't we stick it all back together? Humpty Dumpty, that be arch?
No. We would probably try to use it to our advantage or gain in some kind
of
way.
Turn it into soap, make shoes out of it.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, this, like, skin is tougher than Teflon and flexible.
I could use that to make a crown.
Teflon Don, bitch.
Teflon Don. We'll get to that alien entity in a moment. All of this alien recovery led to the formation of a science group called Project Sign in 1946 to investigate, and then Project Grudge a year or two later in December 1948, who in turn formed the disinformation project, Project Blue Book. Project Ring. At this point, the CIA had control of alien crash retrieval, having originally been formed as the Central Intelligence Group for the single purpose of dealing with the alien secret. The National Security Act was soon formed to oversee intelligence, including the alien agenda. This led to the development of several National Security Council memos, ultimately leading to covert project development. The NSC 10-1 memo legalized, sort of, the coordination of the alien project, and the USA president would have deniability, for they would only be advised as to information from any project once completed and successful. If unsuccessful, the president would never know. Plausible deniability.
Smart.
As you may have guessed, overseeing all of this development from the time of those original crash retrievals in 1947 was Majestic 12. This was a group of influential government, military, and scientific figures who were formed to call the shots at every angle, manipulating the facts and doing all they could to keep aliens secret whilst learning from the aliens and alien technology. They were so secret, not even the president knew. So secret, not even the men in black knew. Above top secret.
Do you think they have been around since the dawn of time? They weren't picked at random. It's like, I'm pretty sure there is a story through time of 12 kings.
Right.
I can't remember it. Just the number 12 and 12 kings, Majestic 12, these 12 beings. Are they a reincarnation coming down through the years? I'm talking shit right now.
You're kind of touching on one of our previous episodes.
Just kind of
around like, that forbidden knowledge. Remember the books?
Yes. Also, when you said the Security Act was formed to oversee intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
I just pictured intelligence from Team America, the computer system. Someone just there to overlook.
Do you know, what I started thinking about at this point is you've got the Majestic 12. Is there like an evil version, the alter team, like the Shitty Six? There's actually only five of them.
What happened to the Six? No one knows.
Then why are you called the Six?
Don't ask.
We don't talk about that.
See the crown?
Let's just whiz over who the Majestic 12 were. The Majestic 12 consisted of the following. Lloyd Berkner. Lloyd was a physicist, engineer, inventor, and leader in atmospheric studies. Science. Detlev Bronk. Detlev was a biophysicist who later became president of Johns Hopkins University. Science. Vannevar Bush. Vannevar was an engineer, inventor, and science administrator who was involved in the Manhattan Project and radar development during World War II as head of the US Office of Scientific Research and Development. Science and government. James Forrestal. James was the last Secretary of the Navy and first Secretary of Defense. Military. Gordon Gray.
Flash!
Flash Gordon was a lawyer who later became President Harry Truman's Secretary of the Army, Government, and Military. Roscoe H. Hillenkoetter. Admiral Roscoe was the third director of Central Intelligence and the first director of the Central Intelligence Agency, aka CIA. Government. Jerome Clark Hunsaker. Jerome was a mechanical engineer, former army pilot, and chairman of the National Advisory Committee for Aeronautics. Military science! Donald H. Menzel. Donald was a theoretical astronomer and astrophysicist who studied at Harvard, the vice president of the American Astronomical Society. Menzel was also a well-known UFO debunker, publicly. Privately, Menzel had a 30-year relationship with the National Security Agency as discovered by UFO researcher Stanton Friedman, and the government paid for several trips to New Mexico for Donald, who had top-secret ultra CIA clearance between 1947 and 1949. Science! Robert M. Montague. Robert was an Army Lieutenant General and commander of the Sandia missile base near Albuquerque. How do you say Albuquerque?
Albuquerque,
that's the one. New Mexico. Military. Sidney Swers. Admiral Sidney was Harry Truman's man when it came to national security as an intelligence expert, and was appointed the first director of Central Intelligence. Government. Nathan F. Twining. Nathan was commander of the Air Materiel Command and the Alaskan Air Command. Military. Finally, Hoyt Vandenberg. Hoyt was an Air Force general who served as the second chief of staff for the Air Force. Hoyt was the second director of Central Intelligence. Military government. These folks were all key components in international decisions of scientific and defense significance with high-level security clearance. They could control everything if they wanted, but even being in such an elite group did not protect you. James Forrestal, the first Secretary of Defense, began objecting to the secret confirmation of alien contact, and soon thereafter, Forrestal was getting spooked. It wasn't long before Forrestal was admitted to Bethesda Naval Hospital, officially following a mental breakdown, but unofficially to keep Forrestal quiet. On May the 22nd, 1949, it is alleged that covert agents accessed Forrestal's room, tied a sheet around Forrestal's neck, and lobbed him out of the window. The sheet tore, but the result was the same. Forrestal passed away, having plummeted to his death. M12 for life, brother!
So the Majestic 12 aren't kind of how I pictured the Majestic 12.
Were you thinking
12
like Arnie?
In my head? No.
Rambo, Arnie.
I was thinking more that they were 12 that were employed and worked under, like, more important people.
No, like these are the important people.
Not that they were the important people.
So these folks basically shape decisions in every important area, and they're all working together. They're above the man.
Do you think there is always 12 of them?
So anytime one is off, another one must
step up.
Arise, yeah. Do you reckon that potentials go to like a job interview and look for
a crown. So if that is the case, I don't think anyone knows who the current 12 are.
Well, yeah,
I think after those initial 12, I don't think you know the identity of the 12, but I believe we've seen members of the 12.
How so?
In terms of they are people that we are aware of in life. We just don't know they're part of the 12. Just like they could just be part of a secret society.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point, because it can't be someone too public facing, like a royal person, a prime minister, a president.
No.
But it can be someone just aside below them. Yeah, who's actually making decisions that they're...
They've always said that about America, haven't they? It's not the president that makes any of the decisions for America. It's the shady ones behind them. And I also don't believe that they're into hiding symbols and things in things. I don't see the point in that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think these 12 are just literally 12 that... Only they know who they are, and they have a secret handshake or sign amongst themselves. But that's it.
So later on, I'm going to cover how they can exist without us being aware of their existence.
I would have thought quite easily, to be fair.
Well, maybe not that easily if we're talking about them.
Yeah, but again, it's the idea, isn't it? We're talking about the idea. We don't know exactly what they do, who they are, how much they operate.
Well, I did show you a document earlier.
Yeah, but again, did they just want that out there? That could have been a mistake, or that could have been someone putting that out there to try and expose the 12 without letting slip that they're trying to expose the 12.
What did I say earlier on? The shitty six.
Ones that attempts were made on their lives and they acted as if they faked their deaths. It's the shitty six versus the majestic 12. The battle that rages on throughout time in the shadows. There's always 18.
18?
Well, right. 17. 17,
yeah,
sorry.
The shitty six is only five.
There's one out there that's just been wandering around for years with a crown. They're waiting for the crowned one to appear.
It's foretold.
And join. In the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Right, back to that alien entity recovered circa 1950. That live alien entity was named Extraterrestrial Biological Entity, EBE for short. EBE was full of shit. EBE, when questioned, would always answer with exactly what the question asker wanted to hear. Always. If a question that could result in an undesirable response was asked, such as, "Are you planning to invade?" EBE would avoid answering clearly. "Would we invade a planet with weather like this?" During the second year of questioning and experimentation, however, EBE had a change of heart and started opening up a little. In late 1951, EBE became unwell. EBE's biological system was chlorophyll-based, and EBE processed food into energy in a similar manner to household plants, but medics and even botanists, couldn't quite work out what was wrong or how to help EBE. With options running out, the USA began broadcasting radio transmissions to the universe asking for help in 1952. These broadcasts went unanswered, and EBE sadly passed away during mid-1952. Dr. Guillermo Mendoza was that treating botanist and became a leading expert on alien biology. This section actually leads onto a future episode on something called Project Serpo, which I was about to begin researching before discovering that Mr. Moonwalker had dibs this case on our pro spreadsheet several months ago, so I expect we'll have a Project Serpo episode coming up in the future. So what we've learnt here is that aliens are full of shit.
What we've also learnt here is that you can be totally shit at your job and still be classed as an expert.
Couldn't save him. Didn't do anything of note.
Fuck all. But yet now you are the leading expert because you
watched someone die.
You were there. Crown.
That's all the Majestic 12 are, really. Just people who wear crowns. No skills whatsoever. Whereas the shitty six are the good guys.
I'm going to turn up here with a crown one day. Although I don't know if I'd get through the door.
Yeah, Moxley may well eat your head. Come 1953, a new president was in post, Eisenhower. Eisenhower was a man of organisation, a man whose most frequent quote was allegedly to get shit done no matter the cost. I'm going to whiz over some more details here. Another couple of projects were formed. Some aliens begun orbiting Earth. Contact was received from a second group of aliens who warned humans not to engage with the first lot and told us to disarm our nukes and they'd support our spiritual development to the point that we'd be able to utilize alien technology safely. America refused. America engaged with the orbiting aliens and a secret meeting was arranged with Eisenhower, with the cover story being that Eisenhower was on vacation. This story reminded me of the Valiant Thor case, because you may remember that Thor met with Eisenhower. Anyway, at the meeting, the aliens agreed to supply MJ-12 with the names of everyone they abducted so that Majestic Ones could cover that shit up. Hostilities were negated on both sides, with the aliens given permission to abduct to obtain human blood and fluids, which the aliens ate. As I said earlier, I won't cover Project Serpo here, which is apparently what this account goes into, but this is where shit gets confusing, because all of this led to the formation of a secret committee called Majority 12. MJ-12, Majority 12, not Majestic, to oversee all alien matters. Eisenhower formed Majority 12, not Majestic 12.
Do you think that you only had to have, say for example they wanted something done, you would have to have the majority of the 12 sign off on it? That's why he called it Majority 12. And not Minority 12. Or Magic 12.
I can't think of any other reason. But then I can't think why you'd have a group of 12 with no one commander within the 12.
Because...
And not go with the majority.
Probably to save having a commander that can overrule everyone. This is a...
It's a committee.
We're all equal here. If we're going to get anything done, the majority of us have to sign off on it. Was Eisenhower part of the Majority 12? Was this how he would keep power after coming out of presidency?
So I'm going to cover who was in the Majority 12 in literally the next section. Majority 12 consisted of Nelson Rockefeller, who Eisenhower had basically appointed to organise the government, the director of the CIA, Alan Welsh Dulles, the Secretary of State, John Foster Dulles, the Secretary of Defence, Charles E. Wilson, the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Arthur W. Radford, the Director of the FBI, J. Edgar Hoover, and six men from the Executive Committee of the Council on Foreign Relations, who were known as the Wise Men. If you want to learn all about this, please check out the William Cooper article link in the episode notes, because I'm skimming over a lot of stuff in this section, because honestly, it's a little bit dull, a la this order said this, that order said that. They all explored and covered up aliens. What is interesting, though, is that Majority 12 continued to change members over time and would eventually order the assassination of President Kennedy when Kennedy planned to go public with the alien reality. Majority 12 would also create Majestic 12, the contingency plan to throw the general public off the alien story. That is right. Majestic 12 is a hoax implemented by Majority 12 to cover up Majority 12's existence, so close to the truth that nobody would suspect the truth.
That is it's one way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
That is one way to do it.
Leave some information out there about basically your group, but that doesn't quite add up, so people can look it up and realise it's bullshit and then think that your group doesn't exist.
Do we know who the wise men are?
I don't recall them all being named. If they were, they weren't particularly known figures. Basically, people at the head of foreign relations, though. So again, people who can influence decision-making across the world.
Mm. Again, people you wouldn't want to be known figures.
Mm-hmm.
How many, like, secret agents and assassins do you think you've walked past in your life?
At least a couple.
Same. Especially in London.
London? Yeah, I was thinking of one particular job interview that I probably won't be able to talk about on the main podcast.
No, you won't. Or this one. I reckon by proxy. I've come into contact with a few without knowing. Probably said morning to a few. Never to be seen again. Oh, Dorothy of her walking stick, she always looks sus.
It's an interesting idea there, isn't it? You could be on a tube one day going somewhere and you've got no idea who's actually sat beside you.
Nope.
They could be doing anything. They could be watching you. Richard Doty, an ex-agent for the US Air Force Office of Special Investigations, a.k.a. AFOSI,
AFOSI,
came out, not in that way, to investigative journalist Linda Moulton Howe, confirming that Majestic 12 were real. Doty showed Howe documentation to back this up. Doty may be a topic for a full-length probe another day, so I won't go in depth here. Suffice to say that Doty somewhat famously claimed that the military purposely covered up their experimental projects. Is there a UFO supergroup creating stories of UFO supergroups to cover up the existence of UFO supergroups? Going back...
What's your job? To cover up UFO supergroups?
Going back to the start before we finish, that Eisenhower briefing document confirming the existence of Majestic 12 either has to be legitimate or a hoax by an incredibly intelligent individual or group. So it stands to reason that this was not so much a hoax, but an intentional false narrative to throw people off the real scent. Majority 12 created Majestic 12, close enough to the truth to make people think that this is bullshit, when actually the truth is even more crazy, filled with just enough errors to convince people that it's a hoax. Double bluff, baby! Some, though, do say that the entire Majestic 12 story is a hoax. William Moore, one of the UFO researchers who went public with this story in 1987, had previously written books on Roswell and the Philadelphia experiment. I have no issue with that, but it is possible that this story was just that, a story. On July the 1st, 1989, Willie Moore gave a speech at a MUFON conference where he admitted spreading disinformation for the Air Force and giving the dirt on colleagues. Did the Air Force use Willie to spread the Majestic 12 story?
Lies, deceit and double bluffs. Yeah, triple bluffs.
It's real murky up in this biatch.
Surprised anyone can get anything done.
Mm-hmm.
He claims that he was spreading disinformation for the Air Force.
He didn't claim, he came clean.
I would have to know what that disinformation was to take it as credible. Like, he was going around saying that the Air Force fighter jets were going at speeds that they're not capable of going at, that's disinformation. Mm. However, that's not disinformation on anything alien or really anything bad. It's just to confuse enemies and stuff like that by letting them know that their planes can go faster when they can't. I don't know if that is quality disinformation. Getting dirt on colleagues is probably telling them who's stealing the fucking BLT sandwich out the fridge when it's clearly marked with someone's name. He's a snitch.
That's a low thing to do, that is.
So what we've gathered in the last few minutes is that Willie Moore is a snitch. We all know what happened to snitches. So
they get the sandwich.
In Willie Moore's autopsy, if he is gone, how many stitches did they find?
William Ten, a.k.a. Philip Class.
What?
Yep, alter ego.
What?
Questioned the authenticity of Timothy Good's documents, which were also Jamie and Willie's documents, as we covered. Class discovered that Cutler, who wrote the Eisenhower memo, was out of America at the time that the briefing was supposedly written. The Truman signature was photocopied from an earlier Truman memo from October the 1st, 1947. Class stated that the errors in these documents would never fool the Soviets or Chinese intelligence and so couldn't be Majority 12 intentional disinformation. A further document began circulating in 1996 called MJ-12, Special Operations Manual, but this too appeared to be a hoax. In 1998, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI themselves, confirmed that two FBI officers received a memo titled Operation Majestic 12. The memo claimed to be a highly classified government briefing from November 1952 for President Eisenhower, taking over from Harry Truman, detailing a secret group created in 1947 to exploit the recovery of an extraterrestrial aircraft at Roswell and cover this work up. The Air Force investigated the document and confirmed it to be a hoax. The Cutler memo too, unsurprisingly, considering Cutler wasn't in the country, was determined to be a hoax to solidify opinion on the Majestic 12 briefing. The CIA actually credit Timmy's 1987 book Above Top Secret with creating the belief that the CIA conceal UFO research. There you have it. Hoax or intentional hoax to cover up an even bigger mystery. Is there a secret majestic majority group controlling the alien narrative? Mystery within a mystery.
Mysterious.
See now, Class saying that it would never fool people, so it can't be real. I think that misses the point, that you want people to think it's fake to convince them that the group doesn't exist.
Yeah. The fact that Class has an alter ego just throw me off.
I think it's actually quite well publicised, nowadays at least. We just maybe haven't touched on it too much ourselves.
True. We also know that the term conspiracy theory or conspiracy theorist was put out there by the CIA to make people think those people were crazy. It was used as a cover-up. CIA caught doing something shit. Oh, it's a conspiracy theorist right there. Oh, look at this crazy conspiracy theorist. Then people start using it to discredit people rather than look into what they're actually talking about.
Mm. Do you know what I find interesting? Is that the FBI received the document, yet it was the Air Force that investigated it and said it was a hoax? Why are the Air Force doing that rather than the FBI?
Probably due to what it's about. So
if you were an FBI agent and you got wind of a document about there being potential aliens, are you passing that over? Or are you Mulder and scullying that biatch?
I think they might have to. depending on what
would Mulder,
what arm of
what
the
would Mulder do, Granville?
FBI.
What would Mulder do?
Did they send it to the wrong part of the feds?
Didn't hit that X counter.
Might have sent it to the left arm instead of the right. It got sent to homicide, and they were like, the "Fuck, have we got this for?" They sent it to the Air Force. Or it might have come across the wrong desk, and they thought, "We're not dealing with this," and sent it to the Air Force.
Day more of my life.
Indeed.
Well, that is it for the case. So to summarise, we've covered UFO researchers James Shandera and Willie Moore's uncovering of a briefing to President-elect Eisenhower outlining that Roswell was a cover-up of a cover-up, that crafts and bodies were recovered, and that a supergroup of government officials, high-ranking military people and scientists had been formed to investigate and cover up extraterrestrial activity. The group has been functioning basically since 1947 and involved in alien craft and body retrievals from many famous sites, including Roswell and Aztec. I give up. Furthermore, the group have been involved in the capture and interrogation of one live alien entity, EBE. EBE was full of shit, unfortunately, and after a year or so of bullshitting wherever possible, passed away. Majestic 12 consists of members integral to international decision-making on government and military policies, and we covered how one original member of the group was offed after getting cold feet on keeping the secret. Not even going public, just raising the possibility. We touched upon how the desire to go public with the alien narrative may have resulted in President Kennedy's assassination too. Lots of credible people and agencies have determined that Majestic 12 is a hoax. We also covered, though, how Majestic 12 may be a disinformation hoax to cover up the real group, Majority 12, who were actually formed by Eisenhower to oversee the alien problem. Majestic 12 were so close to the truth, but with some small holes so that nobody would believe that it was the truth. Clever girls. I've skimmed over a lot of what I considered less engaging content today, such as several projects Majestic or Majority 12 ordered, including Project Sign, Project Aquarius, Project Plato, and Project Pluto, which all were literally investigate and cover up either alien contacts or alien crashes. So please do check out the links, such as Your Paranormal, in our research notes if you are interested in those slices of conspiracy pizza. That is the case. Today, many prominent ufologists believe that Majestic 12, or indeed Majority 12, are real. What do you believe?
I believe that the M12 are real, but they're not called the M12. They're called something else.
They're called the Shitty Six.
And I believe it works how we discussed earlier, with those people behind the scenes, the power behind the power, shaping. But I don't think it's just to do with aliens. I think they're shaping quite a lot in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than just things on the extraterrestrial.
So you are saying that it's, well,
Majestic?
Is it aliens or a secret alien organization? And that's not to say the organization is alien. But they address aliens along our side.
It was a secret organization that happened to look into aliens as well as
other bits and pieces
things.
To control the world,
yes.
I guess. Yeah. Yeah, this one contained a lot of cold, hard documentation, and it is a really interesting concept, but the finer details are a bit less interesting, to be brutally honest. However, I loved the EBE section, and I look forward to us covering that in more detail one day, because I believe there are a few different accounts there. Suffice to say, I also don't believe in Majestic 12. I don't think that I'm saying that it's majority 12 either, but I do think, just like yourself, Mr. Moonwalker, that there is a secret group more akin to the Men in Black, or whatever you want to call them, covering shit up at the highest levels. Any final thoughts, Mr. Moonwalker?
If you see me with a crown, I made it.
You got the job.
It was destiny. Part of the shitty six.
One day we've got to work through who's in the shitty six. But that is a wrap.
I'll let you know when I'm in. By saying that, I'm immediately out. They're like, you can't be trusted. Crown or no crown.
But then they're shitty, so maybe that'll get you in.
Maybe.
He fits our criteria well. Thank you for listening to But It Was Aliens. You can find us across all the social media channels at But It Was Aliens, including Instagram, Threads, Facebook, and we even linger on the X Twitter.
On the Twitter.
Drop us a line if you want. But if what you actually want is to hear some more paranormal probing from us, you can head on over to a dark corner of the internet located at patreon.com/butitwasaliens, where each month we release a bonus episode into paranormal activity too unusual, too sexy, too controversial, damn it, for the general public to ever hear. If you become a patron, for the cost of a coffee, you gain access to these most hidden of archives. Keep the secret, but also encourage your friends. That is it for this episode, so until next time. If you're given a key to the city, can you just turn up at anyone's house like, all right, I'm having dinner here tonight? The truth is up there. Hashtag Proba.
You forgot to mention the place with the memes.
I didn't. My ears just wanted a break. Damn it.